88.1 WBFH. We're on the phone with Ian Mackay of Fugazi Teen Idols Minor Threat. How's it going, Ian?
It's going fine. Thanks.
All right, I kind of want to start at the beginning with the Teen Idols. What I find most intriguing about you guys is that you actually recorded your first and only record after you technically broke up.
Not true.
Not true?
No. Teen Idols recorded two demo tapes, actually three demo tapes, two of them in the spring of 1980 and one of them in the summer of 1980. We broke up in October or November, so we had the tape already made. We released the record after we broke up, but the decision to release it was based on the fact that when the band broke up, we had this demo tape that we liked. We had $800, which we had saved up from playing gigs, and we thought, well, we could either split this $800 four ways, take $200 each and just call it a day, or we can use this money and this tape to document what we've been working on.
Right.
So, in fact, the tape was pre-existing. It wasn't something that was done as an afterthought. It actually was a tape that we'd made.
Right. What was the reason for the breakup?
The guitar player Jordy quit the band, basically, and at the same time, I had been writing many of the lyrics for the band, and I was playing bass, and I wanted to sing, so. When Jordy, our guitar player, quit, then I thought, well, maybe we'll form a new band and I'll sing instead of Nathan, basically.
So after the Teen Idols broke up, you and Jeff formed Minor Threat. What did Nathan and Jordy go on to do?
Nathan sang for a band called Youth Brigade, and Jordy actually wasn't in another band until about 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Jordy went into doing work on computer stuff. I think he went to college first, keep in mind that Jordy was 17 when he left the band. We were all kids. So Jordy actually kind of left the scene altogether, like in terms of, like, he just was out of the picture.
Uh-huh.
Nathan was part of the beginning of the label and was, you know, helping us with the label. At some point, Jeff and I moved into what is called Discord House. That was October of 1981.
Right.
And Nathan didn't live here, but so when the label kind of relocated to this house, it kind of ended up with just me and Jeff. And Nathan, at that point, was singing for a band called Youth Brigade, the DC Youth Brigade,
mm-hmm.
not to be confused with the LA one. And so he was around, but he wasn't working directly on the label anymore. It was just basically Jeff and I and then other people after that.
Uh-huh.
Jordy actually, by the way, now plays in a band called Tone, which is, they're a band, like a guitar orchestra from here in DC. There's eight guitar players. A pretty cool band.
Wow.
I like them, yeah.
Just as a side question, on the Discord 100 release, the re-release of about five Teen Idols studio cuts, correct?
Yeah.
Who's on the front cover? Who is that in the cap and gown, the graduating cap and gown with Teen Idols taped on their back?
That's me.
That's you.
I'm the one with the Teen Idols in the back and Jeff with the hand with a knife. That was we graduated from Wilson High School to public high school here in Washington. We graduated in 1980, and that's the way we decorated our gown and cap. We didn't make it. Actually, I got nailed. He and I were both, it was the graduation ceremony was in the football field, and the students were split into two different groups entering from either side of the field, and both of us got stopped. As we tried to go onto the field dressed up like that, we, like, hid behind our friends the whole time, getting ready to go out. And then when we started the commencement march, I was actually grabbed out of line and forced to take off most of my stuff. Jeff ran past the person that actually made it onto the field like that.
I noticed in one of the band pictures for Minor Threat, there was a skateboard in there. Did you skate as a kid?
Yeah, I still skate.
Oh,
I was a skater long before I was a punk rocker. I started skating about 1974 or 75, and I was really... Actually, Henry and I were, Henry Rollins, who grew up in the same neighborhood as I did, he and I actually skated together. We skated all the time, and we had a skateboard team together before music and before punk rock came in the picture. In fact, he and I took a Greyhound bus all the way to California just to go skateboarding when I was about, I think I was 15, he was 16. We just lived to skateboard.
That's pretty sweet.
And,
that's cool.
I still have that skateboard. I still ride it.
You do?
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. As a part of Minor Threat, you're said to be the starter of the straight edge, quote-unquote, movement.
I've always distance myself from the idea of straight edge being a movement, or at least certainly I distance myself from the idea that I was ever intending it to be a movement. I actually don't see it as a movement. I see that as, I see straight edge as sort of a, it was a psalm that I wrote about someone determining how they want to live their own lives. It was really written out of frustration with a sense of peer pressure I had from my friends in high school in the late 70s who really were pressuring me to get high or to drink, and I just didn't want to. I was not interested in that. I thought it was kind of a waste of time, but I got a lot of grief about this decision, and so I wrote a song about why I didn't think it was so uncool to be straight. I thought it was, I actually thought it was cool to be straight. But, I mean, really, it was an anti-peer pressure point of view, and I never really thought in terms of, like, forming, like, you know, an army around it. And
right.
Unfortunately, movements, a lot of times, create situations where issues overshadow humans, and I'm just not interested in that. I've always hated habits, but not the humans who might have the habits.
Right.
And I think that the movement, I think first off, it's not easy to use such a generalization when you start talking about straight edge, because I don't think that it's such a organized movement. I don't think there's, for instance, like newsletters, and, you know, I don't think there's actually, like, you know, no one's paying dues and that sort of stuff. I don't think it's quite as organized as all that. And certainly it's also been spread out over many, many years and many, many different generations of people. And I'd say that probably for 99 out of 100 people who sort of have called themselves straight edge or consider themselves sort of part of the straight edge movement,
mm-hmm.
are just good people who are just trying to, you know, they're just trying to do the right thing in their lives, and just trying to be thoughtful about how they treat their bodies and also about how they live in this world. Unfortunately, there's one out of every 100 that has a much deeper issue with violence, and
mm-hmm.
is using sort of straight edge platform or what's perceived as a straight edge platform as an excuse for their violence. And unfortunately, I think that the media is always going to focus. In fact, the conversation, not just the media, but just the general conversation about straight edge is always going to kind of focus on this minority of people. But this is typical of phenomena, like, you know, that in the society we live in, violent actions are always going to get noticed. Look at the front page of any newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today's yeah. newspaper, I see buildings blowing up.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday I saw helicopters wrecked. And the day before I saw a dead guy. You know, it's like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
If you go to a party and there's 30 people in the party and 28 of them are having a great conversation that's really interesting, and two of them get into a fight, the next day you'll talk about the fight.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, generally speaking, I don't think of so-called straight edge movement as being a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Right.
But for the few people that do use it as an excuse for their aggressiveness or violence or their power trip, I so fundamentally disagree with their fundamentalism that I have to maintain a sense of distance. And also, I never asked for it, and I would never accept the role of being the leader or the person who decided to create such a thing. I didn't. And
right.
if you look at my interviews from the very beginning, even when I was a minor threat in 1981, you'll see I'm saying it's not a movement. I never thought it was never a set of rules. It was mm-hmm. never a set of rules.
Yeah, and you said that in your second recording of Out of Step.
Right. So it's never, you know, I tried to make it really clear. If you look at the words of the song Out of Step, it says, I don't do this.
Right.
I don't do this, and I don't do this, but at least I can think. You know, I'm just saying, I'm a human being. I can think.
Right,
right, right. You're now in the band Fugazi. What was it like making the transition from Minor Threat to Fugazi? They're a little bit different sounding.
Well, the transition was, it wasn't like I was a Minor Threat one day and Fugazi the next. I mean, there was 5 years or 4 or 5 years between the two bands.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, actually, it was another band called Embrace from 1985 to 86. And so I think there was a lot of evolution going on, musical evolution and personal evolution going on between those years. And also, I mean, keep in mind that, you know, Fugazi in the beginning doesn't even sound much like Fugazi now, you know. I mean, there's certainly, you can recognize things, but it's like anything else. It's like, if you saw a kid who was 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's just say that my musical life is a person. Well, in 1983, that person was 4 years old. And now when Fugazi started, that person was 8 years old. Now that person is 21 years old. I think that it is arguable that those ages, if you see a child who's 4 and then see them at 7, it's a big difference. And if you see them when they're 21, it's a bigger difference.
Right.
So I just don't think, you can't think in terms of like, well, gee, well, how did it change or whatever? It's like, I don't know. It's evolution. In 1980 or 79, 80, I was responding musically or politically to the life that I saw around me. And in 2001, I am responding musically and politically to the life I see around me. It's just expression. And I'm doing the same thing, but it's coming out differently because the world is different. The landscape is always changing.
Right. Well, the coolest part about Fugazi is that you guys have your own unique sound. Where do you get your influences from? Not only for Fugazi, but also from, like, past projects.
I mean, first off, Fugazi and any project, I mean, it's not just my influences, it's everybody's influences. And we actually, the four of us, listen to such a vast array of music that it's almost pointless to even get into listing any of it.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing we uniformly do not listen to is probably what most people assume we do listen to, which is current agitated guitar music, kind of like whatever. I don't think any of us listen to what is kind of termed commercial punk rock now or whatever, or punk rock now. That kind of, it's just not, we don't, I mean, I think we'd be far more likely to find us listening to some Nigerian Afro pop or something.
Right, yeah. One question that I have is, do you guys ever switch instruments? Because I know that you've played bass and guitar before. Have you ever, like, experimented with that or anything?
Yeah, I mean, first off, all of us play basically all the instruments. Brendan is actually a very, very good guitar player, maybe better than Guy and I, and he actually writes quite a few of the songs. I mean, Brendan is a very, he's a great musician. So I think that, experiments. I wouldn't even call it experimenting. It's what we do. We just go in, and some days we go to practice, and Brendan will sit there with a guitar and show us ideas, and we'll just learn them. And sometimes, and Brendan's, I played bass on recordings, and Brendan's played guitar on recordings. I can't remember it because it's not that remarkable to me. It's just the way we make music. So we don't think of it as like, even though we have our sort of assigned roles, and generally speaking, in terms of the band, I mean, when we make a record, we're just trying to make a great-sounding record. So whatever it takes.
Right. What are some plans for Fugazi in the future?
We're home now. Joe, our bass player, and his wife just had a kid, who's now 2 months old. So we're on a break. We want to give them as much time as they want to get to know the kid, and vice versa. I think we will probably start playing in February, because people were going out of town over the holidays and so forth. So I think we probably will not start playing until February. But as a matter of fact, and actually I need to go because I have a band meeting in 20 minutes.
Okay.
We're going to be discussing the future of the band in terms of what we're going to be doing. But we are hoping to play. It's going to be limited because, we got, a little baby.
Right.
A little baby, and we can't go too far. And we can't go away too long. But this is part of life. I mean, the band has been together for, it'll be 15 years in the summer. The first 10 years of this band, from 1987 to 1997, I think it's fair to say that the four of us made the band a huge, huge part of our lives. And I think that for the band to continue and to continue to be viable in terms of what's happening personally, we're going to have to make our lives a huge, huge part of the band.
Right. Right. Well, good luck with Fugazi, and right now we have Epic Problem by Fugazi. Thanks for joining us, Ian.
Sure.
All right, thanks a lot.